Hello, I'm G Smooth, and welcome to another Sunday Conversation. I'm sitting in for the Rileys, and my guest today is Dr. Jeff Person, clinical psychologist. Today's topic, men's mental health, in conjunction with Men's Mental Health Month. Dr. Person, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well today. I thank you for having me on the program.
Thank you for taking the time out to come and have a conversation with us this Sunday. So let's get to it, all right? So June is Men's Mental Health Month, and I think that it is a very, very good thing that we take the time out to spotlight mental health in men, not because of any misogynistic reason, but because, number one, men's mental health is not necessarily a broadly spoken about topic, right? And it is very important that we start shining some light on men's mental health, because we have a number of struggles that we deal with as well.
That is very true, George. And I'd like to say, in respect to that, I've dedicated my life and most of my career with advocating for mental health across all spectrums. Again, as you said, not just the male population, but everyone. But it just so happens that this month we're kind of focusing on men's, and it's something that's kind of been taboo in our community, and we know this, and we want to bring it to the forefront right now. We want to talk more about men's mental health. What are the challenges that we face? What are some of the repercussions for maybe expressing our emotions? And so I look forward to being on the program today and being able to go a little more in depth with it.
So let's get into it. You talk about the challenges, right? What are some of the challenges that we as men, that you've encountered, that we as men tend to encounter and deal with when it comes to our own mental health?
One of the first things that I noticed, even coming up as a young kid growing up in New York, was our socialization, right? As men, we're socialized with certain stigmas that have been attached to mental health. And most of that is dealing with our true emotions, right? We're taught not to say anything, to be strong, to hold it in. Don't cry. Don't you dare show any sort of tears or any feedback. So now what we have to do as we're coming into this new age, and I'm so glad that we're in this state of mind now in 2025 where men are no longer stigmatized. We still have a long way to go, but we're looking at a more healthy approach to what it is that we're really looking at with men, right? So, and this goes across color lines, creeds, religious, political affiliations. It goes beyond all of those. And what we realize now is that men, because we've been taught to be strong and to be the breadwinners, to be the person that is lofted above everyone else, sometimes we have to come down back to earth, right? And we have to look at ourselves, our families, our loved ones, and realize you can't be it all for everyone. Sometimes we have to create these safe spaces for us as men that we can go to, which is, as you know, George, that's where we have our so-called country club, like the barbershops and, yes, and places of that nature, where we just kind of express ourselves. And I think it's one of the reasons, I was part of a study years ago through Morehouse School of Medicine, where we were actually studying why men are so inclined to loving sports so much, why we're such fans, or shortened version for fanatics, of sports, right? It's the camaraderie. It's the competitive nature of things that draw us as men into those realms, right? Mm-hmm. And it's one of, again, the socialization, why we're taught everything has to be a competition. When you get to a certain stage in life, you start to realize that it doesn't have to be as such. Life can be grand without the competitive nature of things.
What would you say to people who say that everything about manhood is actually based in competition because it's based in hierarchy?
Well, again, that's a great question. Again, a lot of that comes from our socialization, right? So what you've been taught, well, let me go into a little more in depth with that. From birth until about the age of 7, a child is more of a blank slate, as we say, right? And up until that age of about 7, a child is dominantly working out of what we call theta brain waves, right? And it means that that child is malleable. They can be shaped and formed into almost anything they desire to be, which is why you'll see a young boy who might be inclined to say, I want to be a superhero, or I want to be a police officer. They start looking at heroic type figures, right? As opposed to a young girl might be socialized to want to be a mother. She starts playing with dolls. She starts doing all of these so-called feminine things, right? Now, past the age of 7 is when that child starts to become their own person and gain an identity. So now they're no longer operating out of theta brainwaves anymore. And they start to become more socialized and a little more programmed into what they're pushed towards, right? So boys are pushed more towards sports. Girls are pushed more towards, let's say, cooking, cleaning, and things. And why I'm so happy to be a part of this now, where we're kind of breaking those cycles and breaking those molds. So that's phenomenal.
So we're talking about nature versus nurture almost. And in speaking about socialization, we socialize from birth. Remember, I mean, we associate our baby boys with the color blue and our baby girls with the color pink. And all of these things that we are taught, like we're taught to be the strong figure, right? We're taught to be the quote-unquote leaders, the head of the households from a very early age. Boys, don't cry. Get up and walk it off if you fall and all of that kind of stuff. And there seems to be a lack of, I don't want to say compassion, but nurturing in that realm, as if it'll make us soft, quote-unquote, right? I just know growing up, you know, with my mom, it was always a hug and a kiss. I'm talking about from really, really small ages, right? It was a hug and a kiss with my mom. With my dad, it was a hug and a kiss up until a certain age. Then it became a very strong and firm handshake. And I didn't understand that until I got older. So my question, I guess, is when you have young boys, right, how would you socialize them to be protectors and this quote unquote strong? Because that is something that's needed as well still. But how do you balance that? How would you think you balance that within the paradigm of raising strong men?
I want to say, it all starts, let's say, for example, there's no male figure in the home directly for that male child. That's why mentoring programs are so important. I remember just maybe 2 weeks ago, a young lady came to me on Facebook and asked, where can she find mentors for young black men? So I immediately directed her to 100 Black Men of America. And it's ironic because they've been around for over 40 years now. And in most major cities throughout this country, but you'd be surprised how many people don't know that they exist. So first, it's about making things a little more prominent now. And so to go back to your question about what would we do with a young male child, how will we socialize them to be that strong figure? It really starts from love. Love wins 100% of the time. There's a strength within love that people underestimate. Right. They think love, there's a connotation with love that love is soft. Right. Mm-hmm. That love means weakness, that love means you're yielding all the time. No, that's just the opposite. Love is actually building. Love is gearing up. Love is looking at things for what they really are and moving through it. That's true love, which is why when we talk about a man and woman taking vows of matrimony, right? And they say, till death do us part, and all of these great things, it's because there's a strength that comes from that bond. When they say tie the knot, literally you're tying the knot, and you're forming a solid base. So love is the key. How you raise Well, let me go back. When you see the inordinate amount of violence that might be in our communities throughout the country, right? You see gang culture. And you see boys literally wanting to belong to something. The root of that is they're looking for love. Mm. There's a strength in love that is overlooked, right? And we have to make note of that, that these young men and women, for that matter, they're looking for something. There's a void. We have to fill that void with love.
Wow, that is a that's a very interesting take. That is, they're looking for love and they're looking for a sense of belonging.
Yes.
So let me, I guess, switch just a little bit in the same realm as far as dealing with how you can be mentally affected, negatively affected mentally when it comes to not receiving what it is that you need. And of course, through those formative years, that really becomes who you are. And it's a very hard habit and mindset to break. But what about men? Because there seems to be this popular opinion nowadays about men, black men, not feeling appreciated in relationships and in marriage. Can you go into that a little bit and kind of expound upon, you know, I guess what that does, how that causes issues and ways that we can address that?
Yes. I work out of the base of the old saying, we see things how we are, not necessarily how they are, right? And the advent of social media has really given people a glimpse, more so into other people's lives, a glimpse that we never had before. So when you're constantly inundated with seeing other people, what other people are doing, what other people are saying, it starts to foster a feeling within you of inadequacy sometimes, right? Especially amongst men, because that competitive nature comes into play.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
Yes, I love that. I love that saying. I've heard you say that many times before, and I love it. And because of that, we there's a window that's been opened up now, and we're able to view, right? Even if that view is not a true view, because as we know, social media can be totally devoid of
the cliff notes.
Yes.
Well, right? I tell people that don't get caught up in watching social media because people are living their best lie.
Ooh, I like that. I like that as well. Yes. Powerful statement, brother. Powerful. And because of that, I think when you talk about a lot of the gurus, right, we know there's so many people that exist on the male side, female side of things, where you have life coaches, right? And you have people that have a platform and an audience at that. And what people in general, no different than what I just described earlier with the gang culture, right? One thing you have to understand and realize, everyone's really looking for the same thing. It's just we go about it in different ways, right? So ultimately, everybody's looking to be accepted. Everybody's looking for love, right? Whether that's a heterosexual relationship, homosexual, it doesn't matter. Everyone's still looking for the same thing. And that commonality is what kind of brings us together. So with social media, what could be a lie now becomes the truth. Because I want to go into this word or this term that a lot of people might not have ever heard of. It's called RAS, R-A-S. And in our field, RAS is an acronym for the reticulating activating system. What the ROS is a portion of your brain that identifies with things that you focused on or you concentrated on. So for example, when we were children and we might have been going on a road trip with our family, and you see a particular car, and you and your cousins or your brothers and sisters might be looking for that same car and count how many times you could see it. Once that registers in your brain, it becomes a force now. Right. And so you'll always see that car. It could have been a Chevy, or it could have been a Buick, or it could have been anything. And you'll see that car from now on. Our brains work that way in real time as well. So the things that you focus on the most, you actually bring into your real life. So what I think what social media has done in conjunction with the RAS, it makes us focus on things that normally would not be there. So when we talk about the male-female dynamic, right? And we talk about relationships even. And the reason why men have been kind of going through this kind of drudgery, right? It's because we're seeing it now. People are paying attention to it. Whereas before, and I just have to be real about this, men were not looked at as even being cared about. Our emotions, our feelings, our thoughts. And now we're becoming more expansive with that. And it's kind of expanding exponentially to the point where you can't overlook it anymore.
Wow. That's very interesting. I heard a saying once said, when you change the things you see will change. And so when you start seeing stuff, it's just like buying, when you buy a new car, you buy a new pair of shoes. Now you see everybody with those shoes on or driving that car. That's crazy. And it's called the ROS?
Yes, the reticulating activating system. I suggest for people just look it up, Google it, you know, do a little research on it. It's very profound how intricate our brains are.
So now, piggybacking on what you said about that need for certain things, right? That's a real thing. I know from, you know, my very limited background in psychology. I took psychology courses in college and that's it. But there was this thing called Maslow's hierarchy of needs and the things that every human being needs. And I do believe that that sense of belonging or that socialization is a part of that. So it's a thing that we need innately as human beings. And it sounds as if you're saying that there's been a conditioning for us to not necessarily get it from certain places. And so we tend to lean into other places to fill that void. Am I following you correctly?
You most certainly are. And I could go a little more in depth with that as well. You know, over the years, I've worked for the Georgia Department of Family and Children's Services. So I've dealt with children and adults when it comes to some of the most heinous of situations you can imagine. And even in our prison systems, right? One of the reasons why solitary confinement is considered such a punishment is because when any human being has to deal with their own thoughts over a long period of time, a long period of solitude, there tends to become almost an echoing outwardly of those thoughts, right? And when there's no outlet for that, now we start to get into different forms of mania and attacks, right? So a prolonged period of being alone is detrimental to anyone's mental health, right? So I want you to couple that with what a lot of men do as what we call suffering silence. That suffering and silence that we do is almost similar to being in solitary confinement in a jail, but you're in the prison of your own mind now. And that could be, oh my goodness, it could be as, if not more detrimental than prison.
So speaking of that, right, and us being conditioned to deal with things a particular way, like we're told not to cry about certain things, we have to hold it in and stuff, and even the way we grieve loss. You know, and I experienced this, as you know, I just lost two parents. I lost my mother in 2023, and I lost my stepfather just a couple of months ago. And I can tell even the difference in the way that I grieve versus the way that my sister grieves, you know. And I ain't gonna lie, being very transparent, it makes me take a look at myself and wonder, is there something wrong with me for not grieving the same way that my sister grieves? Or is my sister grieving? I don't know that there's a such thing as too much, but is it over or am I under? And I lean towards the fact that it's probably more than likely me not processing things maybe the way that I should, just based upon the way that I was raised and having to be the strong, tough person. And then I believe that birth order has something to do with it as well, me being the oldest. And growing up, I'm 4.5 years older than my brother and 7 years older than my sister. So I was always their protector and, you know, and big brother and stuff. So I have to catch myself sometimes in the way that I speak to them because they're not kids, you know. But how do you, what are some suggestions on changing the coping mechanisms that we lean towards? Because I have friends. I know for me, therapy has worked for me. And yes, being completely transparent with our listeners, I go to therapy and I advocate for people to go to therapy. And men, my brothers, I implore you to seek out therapy. You know, what we don't understand is that our existence as black men is traumatic. You know how you know it's traumatic? Because we don't even look at the police as an entity that's meant to protect us. And granted, we have every right to feel that way because of what we've seen and what has been associated with the police over the years. But that's just one traumatic thing. I don't even feel right. Here it is. I'm a citizen, a public figure, somebody who has worked in the community. And if a cop gets behind me, I kind of clench up like, uh-oh. That's a trauma and a trauma response. So how do we build better coping mechanisms to deal with a traumatic existence?
One of the keys that I found over the years that tends to work. Now, nothing's going to be an end-all, be-all solution, right? But there are things that can assist with that process. One of them, believe it or not, in conjunction with therapy, as you mentioned, is meditation. See, I've always been a proponent of meditation because, as we all know, praying is you talking to God or talking to the higher power that you believe in. But meditation is actually the art of now finally listening. And I never underestimate, because let me give you a fact. It's been proven through data and science that 2 to 3 times a week for just maybe 15 to 20 minutes a session of meditation can actually extend the telomeres of your DNA.
Wow.
As we know, the telomeres are those long strands of genetic structure, genetic material, of our all of our DNA, right? And it's the natural, your natural birth, your natural length of life, right? Now, of course, an accident can happen or anything that could take one of our lives. But as far as our natural born life is concerned, those telomeres tell a true story, almost like the perennial rings on a tree, right? And so meditation, getting into real deep thought and breathing, because years ago, I came up with a concept that I called the 3T.
Okay.
The 3T concept basically isolates the 3 major categories of issues that we fall into as human beings, period. Thoughts, toxins, and traumas. The wow. 3Ts, right? Of course, the average human being has about 70,000 thoughts a day. This is a fact. The issue is those thoughts are usually the same thoughts as the previous day. So you have to do something that is going to shift those thoughts. And one of the ways you do it is through what I just mentioned, meditation. You have to start now corralling your brain. And the thing about the human brain, it does not want to be watched or perceived. It will start to almost like a wild animal, will start to try to run around because it never wants to be isolated and looked at. So you have to sit down with yourself. You have to get into deep thought. Watch some YouTube videos. There's millions of YouTube videos right now on different forms of meditation. There's 10-minute meditations, 5-minute, hour-long, 3-hour, whatever. Now we get into toxins. Now, toxins can be also thoughts, but they can also be the foods we're eating, the things that we intake into our body, right? Toxins. And we know living in this Western culture, there's so many things that are not good for us, the different food coloring and dyes and we're not drinking enough water and things like that. So we're talking about thoughts. Now we're delving into toxins. You have to start taking care of your physical health as well, because your physical health does affect your mental and vice versa. Start taking care of your bodies. Start replenishing it with pure good water. Start taking some supplements. If you're not getting it from the foods you're actually eating, there's nothing wrong with taking some supplements. Need good sources of vitamin D, right? Need good sources of magnesium. And it's been proven that most of us on the planet, 75% of the planet is deficient in vitamin D and magnesium. If you'll be surprised how much better you'll feel if you start supplementing those two vitamins.
Wow.
And then finally, traumas. And traumas could be of two natures. Traumas could be emotional stressors that we faced, emotional issues we faced through our life, but they could also be physical traumas. Let's say you were in a severe car accident and your body was traumatized from some serious injuries. Now your body's going through that traumatic experience along with your brain and your mind, right? So you have to find a way, and even balance, as I say, between all of that. And I know we have a short session here today, but I would love if anybody wants to get more in depth, there's an app called Telehelp 24/7. That's TeleHelp, Telehelp 247. I'd like you to go online, telehelp247.org, and check them out. There's an app as well. And let me say for the community, this app was created by a gentleman and fostering love for our community. And it has health coaches, clinicians, therapists, and counselors that are people of color, specifically for our community. And this was created by a gentleman by the name of Mr. Robert Adams about 5 years ago. Please look at the app, go online, register with them. They will match you up with a therapist or a counselor that fits you. And everything could be done online and virtually. You don't even have to be in person. Everything now with technology, we have Zoom, we have Google Meets, all of these great technological advances. And so Telehelp 247 works off of that principle. Great resource to be looked at.
That's incredible. Dr. Persson, I just want to thank you for, you know, taking the time to come and share with us and have a conversation with us about men's mental health. You gave some very, very insightful things that I need to go back and take a look at. Of course, you know that meditation is a huge part of my maintaining my mental health, along with therapy. I want to also encourage people, therapy, therapy, therapy. I started telling people, you know, sometimes you go to therapy thinking that you're crazy, only to go there and find out that there's nothing wrong with you. You just lack the tools to properly process and deal with all of the crazy things that happen to you. So again, Doc, thanks for coming through and having a Sunday conversation with me.
I truly appreciate you, Mr. G Smooth. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me. I hope one day to come back again.
Absolutely. Thank you.